Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
51 Highway, right by my baby's door. 51 Highway, right by my baby's door. I don't get the woman that I'm loving. Won't go down old Highway 51 no more.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and as we listen to Robert One Man Johnson performing Highway 51 Blues live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios, we welcome you to our annual Route 51 year-end review show. We've taken many journeys down Highway 51 this year, and in the next hour, we'll revisit the top news stories, our favorite feature stories, some of the most fascinating guests, and more of the great live musical moments that we brought you during the past year. Because of the special nature of today's show, we will not be taking phone calls. Well, we have a lot of ground to cover today, so let's get started with our choice for the top news story of the past year, the reversal of fortunes for the Stevens Point computer software company Skyward, which almost moved out of Wisconsin, but was saved due to a rare bipartisan effort. More than 500 people attended the celebration for Skyward, the Stevens Point software company that almost left the state because of a law that would have kept it from doing business. Skyward CEO Cliff King broke into tears.
I've been with this company since 1981. I've seen a lot of things happen throughout those years. This is one of the greatest days of my life.
King announced plans for a new global headquarters. In 10 years, the company plans to grow from about 400 workers to more than 1,000. More than 800 of them will work in Stevens Point.
What we've been waiting for, I guess for myself, it finally hit me today what has actually happened.
The crowd gave a standing ovation to a bipartisan group of lawmakers who got Wisconsin's single-vendor system repealed and replaced with a multi-vendor system that allowed Skyward to stay in business. Republicans Scott Krug and John Spiros were joined by Democrats Katrina Shankland, Amy Sue Ruing, and Julie Lassa. Lassa called the old single-vendor plan a state-run monopoly.
You were able to make government do something that it almost never does, and that was admit that it made a mistake.
Governor Scott Walker attended the celebration. He could have used his line item veto to keep the single-vendor system in place, but chose not to.
Puts them in a position to be making a multi-million dollar investment here in central Wisconsin, and those are good-paying, family-supporting jobs that will help not only Skyward employees, but others here in the state of Wisconsin.
Skyward plans to break ground in the spring. In Stevens Point, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. This was not a political year in Wisconsin, but we did have a special election to fill the 69th Assembly seat vacated by former Majority Leader Scott Souter. The winner, Republican Bob Culp, who met Democrat Ken Slazek and Independent Tim Swigum in a Route 51 debate. A big political issue in Congress was the government shutdown. We heard from 3rd District Democrat Ron Kind and 7th District Republican Sean Duffy, who said he was being unfairly targeted by negative ads.
Sean Duffy's Tea Party shutdown could weaken the economy and devastate middle-class families. Call Congressman Duffy. Tell him to do his job. End the Tea Party shutdown of our government.
When Ted Cruz was out there talking about how this is such a great strategy, defund Obamacare, I was on MSNBC and other stations saying, that's stupid.
They are playing with thermonuclear war when they threaten to default on our financial obligations. And so it would be too easy in the future then for the next group to say that they're going to hold the debt ceiling hostage.
That was Ron Kind. Republican Congressman Sean Duffy will have an opponent in 2014, Ashland City Councilwoman Kelly Westland, who said she would make an issue out of the government shutdown.
I've decided to run for Congress in the 7th Congressional District. And unlike Sean Duffy, I'm not afraid to stand up to the powerful interests on behalf of everyday working people. He gladly accepts his taxpayer-funded health care. And then he goes so far as to shut down the federal government, costing our economy $24 billion in an attempt to deny access to affordable health care for the rest of us.
The rollout of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, was problematic, with a federal website that took months to fix and complaints about the individual mandate. We asked Sid Sigelski, the chief financial officer of Aspirus, a philosophical question. Is health care a right or a privilege?
That's a tough question. I think there's an obligation that you provide for yourself, that you do commit to playing within the system, so to speak.
So it's a responsibility.
It's a responsibility, so it's not necessarily a right, but I think there is, I think, a duty of the community to provide health care to those who don't have the ability to provide it in some manner. So I agree with that piece, but I think also the individual has a responsibility to do what they need to do to reduce the cost.
We explored health care issues on a number of Route 51 shows, including one with author and farm historian Jerry Apps, a childhood victim of polio who has experienced a return of the disease, post-polio syndrome.
Starting at about age 60, I noticed I was limping more. And at age 70, I was really limping. And then within the last 3-4 years, now I'm feeling a lot of pain in that bloody leg. But by golly, I'm still with us. And I'm still able to, my head still works and my fingers still work. And I am not feeling sorry for myself at all. I'm just being inconvenienced a little bit. Post-polio syndrome can be absolutely devastating. I asked my doctor one time, was anyone doing research on this for those of us who are polio survivors and are having polio come back to revisit us? My doctor's a young guy. He looks at me right in the eye, and he said, no, nobody's doing any research on this. And I said, why is that? And he said, because you're all going to be dead in a generation. He was at least honest.
The most disturbing health care trend in north central Wisconsin is a new epidemic of heroin use. Wisconsin Public Radio produced an in-depth series on the problem, which included this segment that focused on the Wausau area. 3 years ago, heroin suddenly showed up in small cities and towns across Wisconsin. In Wausau, Marathon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Gary Schneck can pinpoint the week it happened.
In 2010, they did a reformulation of oxycodone, oxycontin, and they put a time release onto that drug. When they did that, it took away the high that people that were abusing the prescription. And within a week or two, we started seeing an influx of heroin come into the community.
25-year-old Luke Slowicki remembers that week in 2010 when he and other prescription opiate users had their supplies cut off and another opiate, heroin, came rolling in.
I saw a lot of people that just went crazy over it. You know, everything changed and all this heroin started coming around and people, it was almost like their drug addiction started all over again.
Slowicki knows something about addiction. He started smoking marijuana at the age of 14. By the time he got out of high school, he was snorting and shooting OxyContin.
Crush it up into powder, put it in a spoon, fill up a syringe with water and cook it up, pull it up, and then go from there.
You chewed it in your veins?
Yeah, I shot mine in my arms. I mean, it's funny because growing up, like everybody else, I never thought I'd be shooting up anything. But it's that devil inside you, that addiction.
That devil inside could be good to Luke Slowicki.
It's a painless, worryless, free feeling. You know, like being a little kid again and being pure.
And that devil inside could be very, very bad.
Every bone in your body hurts, you're throwing up, you have diarrhea, you can't eat, you're hot and cold, you can't sleep.
And Slowicki knows what desperate people will shoot in their veins when that devil gets hold of them.
You know, people that can't wait, they need it right then and there, they'll go outside in a puddle and suck up water. In bathrooms, out of toilets, out of dirty sinks.
Ball.
What's this?
Kick.
Now Luke Slowicki is trying to turn his life around. His 2-year-old son Carter sits in his lap, a bright young boy, smiling, laughing, and naming all the things in the picture book Luke is holding.
Elmo!
What's this?
Tubby!
He's the most important thing in my life. If it wasn't for him, I could honestly say I probably wouldn't have changed.
Luke Slowicki is serving a 9-month work release term in the Marathon County Jail as he turns his life around. The jail itself needed to be turned around after a brutal attack on a corrections officer that exposed widespread security and management problems. 36-year-old Marathon County Corrections Officer Julie Christensen is still hospitalized following the brutal March 27th attack in the jail. This week, the citizens panel saw the video for the first time. In it, suspect Frederick Morris hits Christensen in the head. She falls backwards hard onto the cement floor as other inmates cheer him on. Deputy Chad Billups said they were chanting for her to die.
The whole time they were chanting about hurting her more. Hope she dies.
Businessman Paul Jones, the chair of the citizens panel, said the attack looked coordinated.
You had people that appeared to be cheering the aggressor on. Would you have walked into that room watching those inmates behave in that manner? Probably not. What I saw was a battlefield.
Panel member Mike Beck, publisher of the Wausau Daily Herald, said the incident raises serious questions about the sheriff's department.
At this stage of the game, after seeing all this, I don't trust anybody administratively.
There is now a new sheriff and a new jail administrator in Marathon County. As we started the new year in the wake of the Newtown killings, the debate over gun control came to Route 51 with NRA board member Buster Bockhuber and Tony Gibbart of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence.
Why can't we have universal criminal background checks in Wisconsin and throughout the country?
Because
why do we need
work.
High-capacity magazines? Why do we need assault weapons?
Well, constitutional rights aren't based on need, Tony, and what you're asking for, human behavior, the private sale, compliance is going to be voluntary. It's not going to affect the bad guys who already, your felons, your domestic restraint people, all of those are committing a felony when they obtain a gun. So committing two felonies versus committing one, I really don't think they care all that much, or they wouldn't.
No, it's about the seller, Buster. It's about the responsible gun owner who is selling their guns, that they go to a firearms dealer and have a background check done on the person who is posting on the internet that they need a gun ASAP, just to make sure that they're not setting in motion the next Brookfield shooting.
Another volatile social and cultural issue came to Wisconsin and Wausau this past summer as the city of Wausau held its first gay pride parade, but not without controversy. It was originally scheduled as a gay pride event by a California man who spends time in Wausau, but soon members of Wausau's own gay community voiced concerns that they weren't being asked for their input. More serious concerns were voiced by an alderman on the Wausau City Council.
Indecent behavior will be on full display.
David Nutting quoted scripture and asked Wausau citizens to boycott the event.
Stay away from the parade, or if you do go, stand with your back to the parade of deviant behaving individuals.
The alderman's comments were recorded by Public Access TV. Shannon Thomas, a lesbian Wausau businesswoman, was offended.
He generalized the gay community by saying that we had deviant and disturbing behavior. It was very hurtful, and I had to make a stand against that.
So when the original gay pride event was canceled, Thomas organized what she called a March for Equality that would focus on politics.
We are not allowed to marry. We do not have the rights that come with that for our partner and our families. This is very important.
Hundreds of people turned out for that event. Wausau also found itself in the center of another debate as protests led the school district to overturn a policy restricting religious music. Here's Wausau West senior Kevin Rule, who is one of director Phil Book's master singers, and Rabbi Dan Danson.
The Jewish community always welcomes a balanced approach. It's very, very hard on our students when the music's exclusively Christian or very, very heavily Christian in a program. And so the review that the school board's doing, I think, is appropriate. And we certainly like the idea that there would be a balance in every program that's done.
The music was written back in the day when the church had control over everything. So the greats like Bach and Handel, they wrote their music, but it was written for the church because the church controlled everything in result. So taking that away would just be a devastating blow. It would be like taking Shakespeare away from an English classroom.
Music also played a role in the environmental movement in the greater Stevens Point area, as the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra performed a piece by composer Charles Rochester Young that honored the memory of the late naturalist Fran Hammerstrom. The piece is called Enchanted Moonscape, based on a children's book by Dr. Hammerstrom called Walk When the Moon is Full. Composer Charles Rochester Young tries to recreate the experience of a central Wisconsin woodland on a moonlit night.
The connection with the darkness and all the sounds and mystery of the nighttime, as well as getting the viewpoint of that through a child's eyes, is the part that I was most interested in.
Enchanted Moonscape has a dreamlike quality, with woodwinds and strings answering the recorded night sounds of the whippoorwill and the great horned owl. Writer Casey Martin was Fran Hammerstrom's friend and literary agent.
The dance at dawn, the dance of the prairie chickens, they knew if they got people out to see the bird, they would understand that we needed to protect more the landscape in order for the species to survive.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 Year-End Review Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. There were other environmental stories in 2013, including a bizarre incident in which migrating loons fell in large numbers from the sky because of icy weather conditions. Here's Marge Gibson of the Raptor Education Group Wildlife Center of Antigo.
I knew we were in trouble by Friday morning. We started receiving many, many calls of loons in fields, cow pastures, just about everywhere people were finding loons. The loons were iced. They were flying at altitude, and the birds became wet and basically were encased in ice and then fell to the ground, you know, like missiles from a high altitude. So many of them were actually injured.
Our favorite environmental feature story took place on an hourglass-shaped lake north of Minocqua as researchers wrapped up a 30-year experiment on the effects of acid rain at Little Rock Lake. It's a beautiful clear morning in the northern Highland American Legion forest with the sun dancing on the surface of Little Rock Lake. For DNR research scientist Carl Watrous, it's a good day to wrap up three decades of his life's work.
Today we're removing a barrier that's been in place for about 30 years to separate this lake into two basins.
One half of the lake was kept unchanged. The other half was doused gradually with acid to simulate the effects of sulfur dioxide and mercury produced by coal-fired power plants in Ohio. The acid rain was killing lakes along the eastern seaboard and even across the Atlantic. Watrous wanted to prove that it could also happen here.
If acid deposition in Wisconsin reached the intensity in New York and the Adirondacks in Sweden or eastern Canada, we would see a lot of fishless lakes in northern Wisconsin.
After a few short years, that's what happened at Little Rock Lake.
The fishery basically collapsed. The bass stopped reproducing. The eggs just deteriorated on the nest.
All right, that's good.
In the narrow neck of this hourglass-shaped lake, divers are on the bottom, cutting the heavy black curtain loose from waterlogged sandbags.
Can you see if there's a pair of work gloves in there? There's not much left of mine.
Scuba diver and research scientist Greg Sass slashes with a small blade in muddy water.
Working in darkness and making sure you're not hitting your hand with a utility knife as you're cutting away sections.
Sass has mixed feelings as he brings this 30-year experiment to an end.
It's important, yet it's kind of bittersweet. We don't have very many opportunities, if any, left right now where we can actually split a lake in two and do those sorts of manipulations.
UW-Madison researcher Susan Knight is on top in one of the rowboats.
My role today and back in 84 was mussel, helping put the curtain in back then and pulling the curtain out today.
Knight is a botanist, and she and Carl Watrous both witnessed what the acid did to the plant life of Little Rock Lake.
A dense mat of filamentous algae developed. It was like very, very fine angel hair spaghetti. But green.
Really, it looks like a big green cloud just kind of sitting on the bottom, kind of drifting around. I imagine that the fish probably didn't like to swim through it.
The nasty effects of this experiment led to new state and federal environmental laws, including amendments to the Clean Air Act. Carl Watrous, Susan Knight, and Greg Sass say their work here helped bring back the lakes in New York, Canada, and Sweden, and may have saved the lakes of northern Wisconsin.
The results of the various acid rain bills were astoundingly good. We've gotten very good at removing sulfur dioxide.
The results led to some changes in sulfur emissions, and these kinds of lakes that are typical up in northern Wisconsin are especially vulnerable to acidification, and they're very special, and we just don't have that many in the world.
The lakes of northern Wisconsin are an essential part of the Northwoods landscape. We paid a visit to a special place in Langlade County, one of the last remaining stands of old-growth forest called the Cathedral of Pines. In the Cathedral of Pines, under a canopy of old-growth forest, all you can hear is the wind and the birds. For Andrea Schneider of Racine and Josh Kultgen of Waukesha, it's reason enough for the trip.
To escape the city life and reality for a little while, turn off our phones and walk through the forest where it's quiet.
Get up to the point where our phones are no longer useful. We have to rely on maps.
This remote area in the Nicolet National Forest is a trip back to the Wisconsin that existed before loggers cut down the ancient pinery.
There's over 1 million acres of forest here at Nicolet, and we're only up here 3 days. I wonder how much we can actually see.
They say a squirrel used to be able to go from, you know, the East Coast to the West Coast without ever touching the ground.
The battle between preservation of our Northwoods environment and economic development is being fought in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior, site of a proposed and controversial iron mine. Two lawmakers squared off on the issue in a Route 51 debate, Republican Assemblyman Tom Tiffany and Democratic Senator Bob Jauch.
That was not a public hearing. That was a public hoax. And I would hope that Senator Tiffany might express an apology to the citizens in northern Wisconsin who could not participate, were discriminated against because of the location of that hearing.
We had a couple hearings, including listening sessions, up in northern Wisconsin, had one in Milwaukee.
We've been around the state. This issue has really been thoroughly vetted, and it's time for the rubber to meet the road. I have no apologies for trying to create jobs here in Wisconsin.
The proposed mine has angered Wisconsin's Bad River Band of Chippewa, whose reservation lies downstream. Chairman Mike Wiggins, Jr. and Mick Isham of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission denied that they were increasing their spearfishing take as a protest against the mine.
Big picture, I don't know if that's part of the whole notion of divide and conquer. Turning people against each other on the basis of race or racism means that everyone ends up flying shallow and no one's looking at the true facts, the true deeper understandings and facts that are there to illuminate the different issues between us, because we're stuck at that superficial skin level, and that's a danger to everybody.
The notion that we're going to kill something because we're mad at the state for whatever those reasons, the mine or wolves or whatever, that's just not the way Indian people are taught. I could just imagine what my grandma would say, our elders would say, you know, if we were going to go out and kill fish or whatever because we were mad at the state or mad at any group. And that's just not the way we are.
The heritage of Wisconsin's Native American tribes was the subject of a Route 51 show that featured tribal elder Mike Hoffman, who created the Menominee Place Names map at the UW Stevens Point Museum of Natural History. We asked him what the original name was for the city of Peshtigo.
Peshtigo. It's an archaic word, possibly the place of deer. A Passos is a deer. A Peshtigo.
How about Portage? The community of Portage?
Kakikumanakekne, at a shortcut, Portage.
So the name sounds nothing like the name Portage, but the definition is the same today.
Yes.
Kenosha.
Kenisi, and it means a northern pike. And if you go to that area down there, and you'll see there's the Pike River, and there was even a tavern way, way back they called the Pike Tavern.
Kishina.
Kishitna. The old way is Kishitna. It means he flies fast.
Mackinac or Mackinac, Michigan?
Mackinac, Manassah. And Mackinac is a turtle. And Manassah is an island. Mackinac, Manassah.
Milwaukee.
Manawa. And it means something unfortunate will happen there.
Prophetic. The ancient Navajo language was the focus of a Route 51 show that featured Chester Nez, the last surviving Navajo code talker of World War II, who spoke to large Veterans Day crowds in Edgar and Wausau. More than 800 people turned out in Wausau to see 92-year-old Chester Nez, whose Navajo language created an unbreakable code that helped defeat the Japanese in World War II.
28 Navajo code talkers in World War II. I was very happy to be selected to be one of the members, to be able to serve our country and come home alive.
Chester Nez grew up near the Navajo Reservation in New Mexico. In the 1920s, he was sent to boarding school where the American government punished him for speaking his native language, a language the government would later use to help win the war. For Patrick Bradley of Wausau, Nez's appearance was personal. Bradley's father, John, helped raise the flag in the iconic picture of Iwo Jima.
I just learned a couple weeks ago that the communication from one of the battleships at Iwo Jima to the main island directing that a larger second flag be raised was given in the Navajo code.
Melody Campbell, a member of the Chippewa tribe of Bay Mills, Michigan, says her family can relate to Chester Nez's experience in boarding school.
I had a grandmother, and she was sent to the boarding schools as well, and she never spoke a lick of her native tongue until probably about 6 months before she passed. She started speaking it again.
Chester Nez also appeared Sunday night at nearby Edgar High School, whose lecture series, A Walk in Their Shoes, brought him to central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. The Walk in Their Shoes program also brought William Kamkwamba, the boy who harnessed the wind, to Route 51. Kamkwamba brought wind energy to his impoverished village, and he spoke of his desire to create a new Africa.
I find out that there's like so many talented young people in many countries in Africa, but the problem that sometimes they don't come to fully use their talent, their knowledge, to realize their dreams, to come up with their dreams, to try to find solution towards the problem that they are facing.
You think that's going to happen?
Probably it will happen.
You think you're going to play a part of it?
I'll try my best to be part of it.
And you sum up everything with one important lesson you learned. If you want to make it, all you have to do is try.
Yeah. If you don't try, then there's no way. But if you try, if you won't make it, it's okay. But if you try and you made it, then you have made what you want to do. But if you don't try,
if you don't try, you'll never see what you might have been able to do.
Yeah.
And persistence is so important, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. Everything is possible.
And the spirit of never giving up was also experienced on a local level at a century-old Capuchin monastery in the city of Marathon. St. Anthony's Retreat Center will continue its mission even though Father Dan Crosby and the other friars have departed. Here's Father Dan and St. Anthony's new vice president, Barb Saransky.
It's the realization that this is the last Christmas. It's a last time. There are so many last times for us. All I have to do, that's what we hear, all I have to do is to drive in that driveway through those fieldstone walls
yes.
out in front, and something happens to me, and I begin to be more at peace. Retreat, you've got to step back.
Yes.
And reassess who you are so that you can go back in with deeper strength.
In this little segment, we're going to be doing the Pizzicato Polka by DeLieb.
And Wausau's own Michael Andrews continued his mission of bringing live chamber music to North Central Wisconsin as the South Beach Chamber Ensemble made their annual pilgrimage to the Wausau area and our Route 51 studios. I'm Glenn Moberg. When we return with Route 51's 2013 year-end review show, we'll look at some of the top economic development stories of the past year and more live music with the Sid Kyler Dixieland Band, singer-songwriter John McCutcheon, and a very special appearance of Peter Paul and Mary's Peter Yarrow and harmonica virtuoso and former Congressman Dave Obey.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, enigmatic glass artwork by Wisconsin native David Hutchthausen, along with contemporary jewelry and vessels fashioned from precious metals and stones comprise two new exhibitions on view through January 19th. More at lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the 2013 year-end review show on Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We had an unlikely hero in North Central Wisconsin last year, Margareta Wolf, a 96-year-old grocery store owner from Marshfield who single-handedly faced down a knife-wielding young man who tried to rob her.
He came in and he had a mask on. I said, "Can I help you?" "Yes," he said, "open up your till." I said, "If you want something, I'll give you all the Tootsie Rolls I got here." But I said, "I am not opening up that till." You know these little jackknives that men carry in their pockets sometimes? He took it out. He kind of looked at me and he said, "Why don't you walk back to the store?" I said, "I am not walking anyplace."
One of the top economic development stories of last year was a new lease on life for the city of Mosinee and its paper mill, which came under new ownership. The Mosinee paper mill dominates the landscape and the economy of this old mill town, straddling the Wisconsin River on the busy four-lane Highway 153 corridor. There's more at stake here than the mill's 450 good-paying jobs.
Well, my dad was the original Charlie, but I'm the second generation. Jeff and Pam are the third generation.
Chuck and Jeff Kehos mind the store at Charlie's Hardware, which has been in business since 1957, serving the people who work at the mill and the other businesses that depend on it. Chuck Kehos says he's hoping for the best.
It's a great feeling. It's another investment firm, and we're concerned about it. According to the papers that we've read and heard on TV, they do have a lot of experience in the paper industry, and that's a big positive.
The city of Port Edwards is similarly blessed by a new owner for its old paper mill, who plans to turn it into a business park. Further south, the city of Adams has entered into a partnership with Geitz, a green energy company from Australia. Mayor Jan Baumgartner and Administrator Bob Ellisor see big things ahead as the company locates its North American headquarters there.
This is one massive makeover that we're going to be looking at. We're just not going to be the same city or the same county. We're going to be destination point for a lot of communities that want to see how this technology can be used and how it can better their own circumstances.
It's happening so fast that I think a lot of people are skeptical, but I'll tell you what, hang on. The city of Adams is going to become the green capital of the United States. I think we're writing ourselves a bigger story, and we're very excited about it.
The city of Wausau may become the curling capital of the U.S. thanks to a brand new world-class facility, while the Wisconsin Woodchucks are planning big renovations to Wausau's old athletic park. But the biggest renovation story is still Wausau's Grand Theater, which hosted architectural historian Richard Guy Wilson. He appeared on Route 51 with the Grand Theater's Jim O'Connell.
In the 19th and the early 20th century, and really up until about World War II, going to the theater, was the environment was just as much a part of the experience as what it was if you were seeing on stage or you're watching in the movie. I mean, if you go back and you look at these interiors and, of course, the lobbies and all of that, you're walking into, might say, quote, the common man's Versailles.
Richard joins a host of luminaries that have appeared at the Grand Theater. B.B. King, Aretha Franklin, Itzhak Perlman, the Blue Man Group. He fits right in as a clear example of his genre.
Richard, you're not going to be wearing blue face paint on Wednesday night, are you?
Well, I'm still working on my costume right now. But I'll try and wear a wild bow tie.
A Wausau microbrewery experienced a big expansion. The Bull Falls Brewery is now canning its craft beers and selling them all across central Wisconsin. It was a festive atmosphere in Wausau with a German brass band and 300 people at the dedication of the new Bull Falls Brewery. Co-owner Don Zamzo led the crowd in a Bavarian toast. For Zamzo, it's been an unlikely journey.
7 years ago, I didn't even think we'd be having a brewery at all, because this area was almost, you might say, condemned several years ago. It was brownfield.
The Stevens Point Brewery is also expanding, as is Central Waters Brewery in Amherst, thanks to a commitment to green energy, local control, and sustainable agriculture.
Sorry, we get excited.
Paul Graham and Anello Balica, president and vice president of Central Waters Brewery, walk the floor of their big building in the small village of Amherst, Wisconsin. Graham is dwarfed by stainless steel holding tanks.
This is where basically the magic begins to happen. Temperature controls for different vessels, on and off switches, and variable frequency drives.
Malika says it's not magic, but science, which is producing the bubbles of carbon dioxide in the buckets under the tanks.
You're listening to Bourbon Barrel Stout in its primary fermentation stage.
That award-winning Bourbon Barrel Stout is one of the reasons the company is growing.
The whole state of Wisconsin, parts of Minnesota, and we just opened up the entire state of Illinois.
Central Waters is the first and only brewery to earn Wisconsin's Green Master designation. Solar thermal panels warm the building and help heat the water for brewing and cleaning. Graham says he's doing it to save money.
We can basically heat a 20,000 square foot building for a zero cost now.
Graham and Malika are also committed to sustainable agriculture, convincing four other Wisconsin brewers and seven farms to form the Midwest Hops and Barley Cooperative.
We actually funded some of these farms to get them going on their hops production.
Without farmers growing hops and farmers growing barley, we're all out of business.
And one of Graham's sources for barley is as local as you can get.
2 mile radius.
2 miles down the road, Paul Graham's neighbor, Bob Stuchinski, climbs out of his tractor and points to his acres of organic barley.
To actually take your product from planting the seed to growing it to harvesting it through that whole process and to enjoy the final product at the end, drinking the beer, I mean, that's pretty hard to beat.
Central Waters provides a stable source of income for Stuchinski. His barley protects the brewery from the ups and downs of the international grain market.
It's taken the highs and lows out for both of us. We're local. We're not organic from Canada. We're from 2 miles down the road.
Bob Stuchinski gets a good price. Anello Malika says it's worth it.
We pay more for that barley than we do for the other barley we buy. But the money is staying in the community. He, his friends, his family's friends, they're going to buy my beer. You know, back to the way it used to be before Prohibition, before industrialization of brewing.
And the way it's done now, for a profit, in Amherst, Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And one of the great economic stories of this or any year is the success of Harley-Davidson motorcycles and the annual fall ride in the city of Tomahawk. Ask any Harley rider and they'll tell you they love the roar.
Oh, it just sounds good. Sounds real good. Makes you smile.
To me, it's like rolling thunder.
Kerry Young of Beaver Dam and Dave Dewar of Waupun rev up their engines on Main Street Tomahawk, the city that makes the bikes. Paul Cruz made the annual pilgrimage with his friends from the Wisconsin Dells.
It's an iconic image. Been there for 110 years. It's a family. It's a second family to everybody.
That second family spends a lot of money in town. Jim Wise owns the Tomahawk Surplus Store.
The store is 57 years old. We've had it 27 years, and we've seen this event grow from a couple hundred bikes to 30-plus thousand. It's huge. This event brings in more money regionally, I think, than any other event in northern Wisconsin.
The money flows into food stands run by local churches and charities, enough to support some of them for the entire year. And it flows into the tents on Main Street that are selling Harley merchandise. Shirley and Norm Slatke rode here from Appleton.
I love their clothing.
What do you like about it?
Cleavage.
Can I ask you how old you are?
74.
And you guys are still riding?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This year I had to buy a trike. I'm getting old.
This year's ride is expected to raise $120,000 for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. In Tomahawk, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Route 51 again featured live music from the Dixieland Jazz Band of the legendary Sid Kyler, who's been performing in Wisconsin since the late 40s. Here's his theme song, Do You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans, with Louis Pratt on clarinet, Dwayne Askew on sax, Roger Pickering on bass, and yours truly on guitar. When we return, more live music from singer-songwriter John McCutcheon and Peter Yarrow and former Congressman Dave Obey. I'm Glenn Moberg, and this is Route 51's 2013 Year-End Review Show. Thank you. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the 2013 Route 51 Year-End Review on Wisconsin Public Radio. As always, we continued our support of the local arts scene with a program on regional poets, including young Cassidy McBee, who wrote this poem, When I Have Children, the night before she appeared on the radio.
I will teach my kids to tell the ones they love what they would say if they were at their funeral, so they don't lose the chance to tell someone how important they are to them. My kids will know respect, not just for others, but for themselves. I'll teach them to never love anyone more than they love themselves, that self-love is not the same thing as egotism, but instead it is confidence. Confidence to be the best they can possibly be. I will teach my kids that they are no better than anyone else. They are not prettier. They are not smarter. They are the same as everyone else, and differences should be embraced, not ridiculed. My kids will know that mommy is only trying her best, that mommy loves them unconditionally. When I have children, if they're afraid to dive into the pool, I will tell them it is only water, and a human body is more than 50% water. So it's kind of like you're jumping into life, and diving into life can be terrifying, I know, but you are not alone. You will never be alone.
Wow.
And you wrote that last night?
Yeah.
We also teamed up again with the Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum of Wausau to showcase their exhibit on origami. Our guest for the show, Wisconsin Public Radio classical music host Ruth Ann Bessman, an origami artist who had me folding paper live in the studio.
I want you to carefully lift up one of those center edges. Lift it up as far as it'll go.
Okay.
And then over as far as it'll go. And what it does is it locks your corners,
two corners in place.
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
And crease it down well.
All right, we're doing that.
Okay, excellent. Right, and do the same to the other side.
Now it really looks like a turtle shell.
Now I really
A hat. It looks like a hat.
Okay, like a hat. And I really believe that origami is magical. Okay. Now you see, so far we've got this flat piece of paper. But if you lift up those edges that are in the center, or a little off the center now, if you just straight lift it up, you're going to see a box taking shape. A flimsy one.
Yeah, I've got a
box. But a box.
Route 51 also featured a live musical appearance from Central Wisconsin native John McCutcheon, who has recorded 36 albums, including Winter Solstice, which he recreated in a holiday show at the Rothschild Pavilion. He also recreated his classic Christmas in the Trenches for us.
This was one of those songs that... there's some songs you write and some you just write down. And this is one of the latter. It just came out nearly completely formed.
It wrote itself.
So I can speak of it with a little bit dispassionately because it was a gift. I don't mean to get too woo-woo because I'm not that kind of a guy. But I also know as a writer that we don't know
where things come
from. We really don't know how this all works and when we're in the right place at the right time. But what's even more amazing is it's a true story. My name is Francis Tolliver. I come from Liverpool. 2 years ago, the war was waiting for me after school. Belgium and to Flanders, to Germany to here, I fought for king and country I love dear. It was Christmas in the trenches where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were still. No Christmas songs were sung. Our families back in England were toasting us that day. The brave and glorious lads so far away. Well, I was lying with my messmates on the cold and rocky ground when across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, now listen up, me boys, each soldier strained to hear as one young German voice sang out so clear. He's singing bloody well, you know, my partner says to me. Soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rested silent, the gas clouds rolled no more, as Christmas brought us respite from the war. Well, as soon as they were finished and a reverent pause was spent, God rest ye merry gentlemen, struck up some lads from Kent. The next they sang was Stille Nacht, to silent nights as I, and in two tongues one song filled up that sky. There's someone coming towards us, the frontline sentry cried. All sights were fixed on one lone figure, trudging from their side. His truce flag, like a Christmas star, shone on that plain so bright, as he bravely strode unarmed into the night.
John McCutcheon doing his holiday classic, Christmas in the Trenches. And one of the musical highlights of 2013 on Route 51 was the appearance of Peter Yarrow, of Peter, Paul, and Mary, who appeared with harmonica virtuoso and former Wisconsin Congressman Dave Obey. They were at UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement in a fundraiser for Mr. Obey's Congressional Library. I had a chance to play guitar alongside them as Yarrow talked about his campaign against bullying.
Mm-hmm. Now listen to not your talk show, but listen to the talk shows where that's funny to ridicule and demean and speak cruelly of other human beings. We live in a very, very difficult time where the heart of America has been attacked by a terrible illness. And what I am working on, and I just did a Bill Moyers interview on Tuesday with Francine and her husband David Wheeler. Francine delivered the presidential address. The time before last, she lost her son. And she is a great singer. She's part of the Newtown Flagpole Cafe, which is an ensemble that does a weekly radio show. And I had sung with her. And we must understand that, and you'll see this, just as we're talking about it now, we must make sure that those children that are in the schools do not reiterate the cruelty that we see in general society now. And if we start them early enough, we can succeed. And music can be a big help to doing that.
Don't laugh at me. Don't call me names. Don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes,
E flat.
I'm the beggar on the corner. You pass me on the street. And I wouldn't be out here begging if I had enough to eat. And don't think I don't notice
that our eyes never meet.
Don't laugh at me.
Don't call me names.
Don't get
your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes,
we're all the same.
Someday we'll all have perfect wings. Don't laugh at me.
I'm fat, I'm thin, I'm short, I'm tall,
I'm deaf, I'm blind. Hey, aren't we all?
At me.
Don't call me names.
Don't get your pleasure from my pain.
In God's eyes,
in God's eyes,
we're all the same.
Someday we'll all have
perfect wings.
Don't laugh at me. Don't laugh.
Peter, Paul, and Mary, and here live in our studio, Peter Yarrow and Dave Obey on harmonica.
And now we're going to sing Blowing in the Wind, one of the two songs Peter, Paul, and Mary sang at the March on Washington in 1963 that is still as relevant as ever. And at that gathering of the Newtown folks, Francine Wheeler powerfully sang the line, "How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned?" But she wasn't referring to the state of war between countries. How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer's blowing in the wind.
I'm Glenn Moberg. 2013 was a great year for live radio in Wisconsin. Thanks for listening to the Route 51 Year-End Review Show and for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger, and all of the wonderful guests, the thinkers, the doers, and artists who have appeared on our show over the years. We are truly blessed. As always, thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week. We're heading out of town.
For they're allowed to be free. How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see?